During that game in Munich last week, I got a text off one of Pogba's family, and it just said, different animal.
You know, Mancini has wanted everyone to have fun, you know.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
The Football Show on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Great to have you along for the Football Show, joined by Daniel McDonald of the Irish Independent. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Joe. How
and Eamon Dunphy's official favourite pundit, Damien Delaney. How you doing?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Delaney has asked that I introduce him as that going forward. He's not former Crystal Palace player. He's not former Republic of Ireland player. Damien Dunphy, Eamon Dunphy, seal of approval. That's what you're all about. How's the form? All good?
All good, yeah. Pretty good, man. Yeah, happiest man in Ireland today. I am actually happiest man.
Oh,
yeah. We had, I told you we had a baby there about 6 weeks ago, and she was a nightmare. We bought one of those mechanical arm rocking things, and it worked a treat, Joe.
I thought you were going to say she had almost made the dada sound or something, but no,
a bit of peace and quiet.
Hey, listen, that's good. You take it any way you can get it, right?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So, look, lots going on. I mean, Group F is proving pretty interesting. As things stand, and there are 45 long minutes to go, France on 5 points, Portugal 4 points, Hungary 4 points, Germany going home, Dan McDonnell.
Yeah, it's sort of, I have the sort of big screen, small screen thing going on, and it's sort of tempting to, like, put Hungary, Germany on the big one at this stage, because it sort of feels like that's the game where everything is on the line now, whereas the Portugal-France game... I don't know, there's an element of contentment around aspects of the performance from certain players, I think. You know, it doesn't feel like it has that real intensity of, yeah, this really matters. Whereas the last sort of 10-15 minutes of the first half, I did actually more so watch the Germany game, and they're sort of like around 15-20 minutes away from panic stations here. But they had a lot of chances, after immediately going behind, but even before half time. There was just one or two Hungary breaks where they had like got a shot away and stuff. And you're just thinking, this got very interesting. And all the permutations and what it means for sort of the pairing, you know, particularly with England's group. I mean, it's swung in all manner of different directions. So, yes, possibly a more interesting night than maybe I would have expected.
Damien, what match are you watching?
I'm watching a France game. And I agree with Dan there. It just has this air of two teams that probably know they're going to qualify for the next round. And... there's no real edge to it, but it's still a decent watch. I'm hoping it catches fire there or something happens. Obviously, plenty of talking points with the penalties. I have to say the Semedo one is one of the softest I think I've ever seen given. You know, it was a run inside. I think it was Cristiano Ronaldo ran inside and Semedo just tracked his run and just didn't get out of his way. Granted, he raised his arm, but I mean... that used to be coached not so long ago. But I think once the referee gives the penalty, they're very, very slow to overturn it, if you understand what I'm saying, because they don't want to be saying the referee got it wrong. And the referee even indicated after the penalty was given that the arm was raised. But, I mean, he's entitled to stand his ground there, Semedo. And very, very soft, in my opinion.
Damien, one of the highlights of that first half was Hugo Lloris's look of innocence routine after coming out with his fist, taking De Neo out of it in the head, and then not having any idea why the penalty had been given.
Oh, Benzema just scores.
Oh, France 2-1, Benzema. He'd been getting criticism. I was going to talk to you about Benzema, but that conversation now has a line through it because he was getting criticism in advance of the game for not scoring. He looks like a man who's found out it's offside. It is offside. So still 1-1 between Portugal and France. So Lloris was saying, I don't understand. Pogba protesting as De Neo lay there stricken on the ground, having taken like elbow fist to the head. Keepers at all levels love coming out like this with abandon and taking people out. There's a lot of Leinster Senior League warriors out there who know all about that as well, not to mention very top level as well. That's nailed on penalty, I presume.
I, It is, but you very, very, very rarely see them given, if ever. I mean, goalkeepers, as you said, have all the goals been given.
Yeah, it was an offside. Yeah, the replay sort of showed he had a good starting position. So, yeah, 2-1.
Great goal, actually, by the way. Great run, splits the two centre-backs. Ball gets slid down the side, and he does, millimetres really, kept himself onside. A really tidy finish across the goalkeeper in,
I'll just describe it. So it's a ball around the corner and he gets in behind and finishes very well. That takes the moment away slightly, Dan, doesn't it? That he walked back, trudged back, and then he finds out it's a goal afterwards.
Well, he's actually still managed to get some enjoyment out of it, to be fair. And he had a sort of a second celebration afterwards with the players. But I think that means, as it stands, England would play Hungary in the round of 16, by the way.
Okay.
So, football's coming home and all of that.
Well, that would be a bit of a result. You double check that for me for a sec. And then, Damien, you were saying about Lloris?
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, they're very rarely given. Goalkeepers have carte blanche in those types of situations, you know, whether it's coming up with their knees raised or in a super aggressive manner. They are a protected species and you're not allowed to see them. So I'm pleased it was given because it was reckless. It was carefree abandon. And he did endanger the player with the kind of the ferocity that he came out with. And just having missed the ball, he was always going to cause some damage. So probably always was a penalty. It's just surprising to see them given.
Mm. So the Portuguese manager, Damien, Fernando Santos, came out after the Germany game and he said, "We've come to the conclusion we weren't playing the Portuguese brand of football against Germany. Something's wrong if a team has conceded 3 goals in 50 or only once in 58 games and then concedes 4 for the first time. We need to attack and defend well. The players will react well." So the Portuguese brand of football, usually pretty tight, pretty defensive. Are they doing a better job tonight? 2 goals suggests not perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite correct in saying that. Yeah, I mean, you know, he is a defensive type manager. He does err on the side of being defensively strong. You look at his record since he's taken over; they have been built on clean sheets. But it's interesting that one of the changes he made and taking Bruno out and gone with a bit more, I suppose, Steele, Moutinho, Sanchez. I suppose a bit of stretch to say Sanchez is a bit of steel, but he's just mixed it up to be a little bit more solid. But I suppose in a team where you're always carrying Cristiano Ronaldo defensively, not on an offensive manner, but it's very difficult to see what he's complaining about, really, but not great for him tonight. Sorry, I'm just watching an incident there.
Just trying to get the permutations here, Dan. So yeah, as things stand in the table, where are we?
Yeah, so as things stand on the table, yeah, France are top, Hungary would be second, and it would be England-Hungary next Tuesday, I think, in the round of 16. And you would have a situation where it'd be Portugal and Germany on three points each. I think actually that puts Portugal in a spot of bother.
That puts Portugal out. Do Germany get through on 3 points? No guarantees, I would think.
I would have thought their goal difference would make them okay. They'd have a better goal difference than Ukraine, I would have thought, who are already. I think it's Finland. Finland are the one team that are waiting, but they needed Portugal to lose by 4 goals tonight or something to have an opportunity. But what it does mean, if Germany score any goal of any, like if Germany even draw now against Hungary, it will be England-Germany. So like, if France hold out and win the game, it's effectively, you know, Hungary v England if Hungary win, and Germany with any other scoreline v England. So it's sort of interesting because, you know, England are in this half of the draw again where, that, like, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but there was obviously some great drama earlier on with that Sweden late goal sort of kicking Spain actually into the hard part of the draw. But from the perspective of whoever wins England's round of 16 tie, it, you know, in theory, it smooths their passage if they can get through because they'd probably be favourites in every scenario.
Okay, so we're going to attempt something actually a bit daft, I'm realising, which is to talk about things as all of this happens and changes in front of our eyes. It's just, it's dawning on me now, this is an impossible task.
Hungary have screwed it up. Like, we were probably expecting Germany to be one up at this stage or something, and it wouldn't have been as hard to do that, I think. But that permutation is really thrown the sort of cat amongst the pigeons here, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever games were on last Wednesday, Damien, we just chatted away and it was all very irrelevant in the background there, it felt like. What about Germany then? I can't get a handle on Germany because watching the Portugal game on Saturday, they looked really good in a whole bunch of different ways and suddenly it felt like they were back and now they're wobbling again. Where are you in Germany, Damien?
I think I described them last week as like, you know, when an animal is dying, it has one last kind of kick in it. And I think that was it last week with the win that they had. They're obviously a team on the wane. They absolutely are. You know, look at some of the results leading into the tournament. They're not in a good place. You know, certain players were forced out and then they were brought back in again. Mats Hummels is aging. They don't have a serious number nine. It doesn't look like it's a cohesive unit. The manager's leaving. They're not in a good place. They're a team caught between two or three stools in my book. And that's why the manager's moving on to try and get a handle on it. You'd wonder who's really in charge there. Yogi Löw, obviously the manager, but he obviously saw this coming. That's why he moved on Boateng. Muller wanted to kind of reinvent German football, get younger players through. Younger players maybe haven't developed as quickly as what he was hoping. Results suffered, pressure came on. When you've been there as long as what he has, you know, it's always going to be a difficult situation when you have a couple of poor results. But the new manager's coming in now and they'll be building for a new cycle of success. That's where they are now. I never envisaged them doing a whole pile of damage in the tournament, even if they get out of the group in third place by somehow getting something against Hungary tonight. Then I still think as soon as they come up against England should, all things being equal, be too strong for them. But I can't see them going much further than that.
Okay. Because there was a sense maybe they had found something. Because when you score four against Portugal and take them apart the way they did, that all seemed pretty promising. And we were doing pieces here in the show about Thomas Muller and how even at 31, he's still, you know, as good as ever, if not better than ever, in his intelligence. And maybe they were starting to figure things out amongst themselves. So do you have that down more to Portugal being pretty woeful at the weekend?
No, I have it down to Germany having an odd performance in them, because they obviously still have some world-class players, but maybe the hunger isn't there, the cohesion isn't there, the togetherness isn't there. And a team is always capable of pulling out a massive performance, rolling back the years, so to speak, like they have done. But you're never going to have games where everything's going well for you at some point, especially in tournament football, especially when you get out of the groups. There's going to come periods where the kitchen sink is going to be thrown at you, life is going to become very, very difficult, pressure is going to come on. And unless you have the mineral, so to speak, of being able to dig in and see it out, the cohesion, the togetherness is there, you're going to get found out. So whilst they had a fantastic performance and everything probably went their way, they're capable of those results. But sooner or later, somebody's going to get their number, and that's when you have to dig deep. And I don't believe that team has it anymore. It's kind of at the end of its cycle of success, really. It's probably a few. They didn't qualify for the previous tournament, so they're probably a few years past it. And I suppose a new manager can't come in quick enough.
Dan, I couldn't really see Spain 5, Slovakia. Earlier on, I was working, caught up with various bits and bobs. So that's an eye-catching scoreline. Luis Enrique is trying to get this Spanish team playing more directly and through the lines. And tiki-taka maybe isn't the most cutting edge of approaches, is the general sense in world football at the moment. So what did we see from Spain this afternoon?
I don't know. I mean, like, the 5-0 was, I mean, it's an emphatic scoreline. But it's funny, like, the first half an hour or so, I know they had to miss penalty, but that was, you know, there was a sort of a certain amount of controversy around the decision. But I don't know. I actually wasn't madly impressed by them, I have to say, even though they won the game. Like, but I mean, Dubravka basically threw in the first one and then was pretty poor for the second one. And then, listen, Slovakia were pretty limited, and the second half just ended up being a bit of a non-event. And to be honest, I was on Poland-Sweden watch for the last 20 minutes because the Spain game was over. But I don't know. It's interesting. I was actually reading, there was an interesting piece today that Rory Smith put up from the New York Times, and actually just speaking about how Spain really, like, their reliance on, to a degree, still on Morata as that central striker, and how actually this viewpoint that Spain is paying the penalty over the years for producing a lot of the same type of players, a lot of the same type of sort of, you know, talented sort of players who are comfortable on their front, you know, wide in the front three. But actually, in terms of like that outstanding central striker, it's something that they lack. And to be honest, they have looked a bit toothless at times, even in this competition. They haven't necessarily been, you know, terrific to watch. And sometimes it has been a bit sort of like their exit from the World Cup in 2018 against Russia, where it was a bit pass and they were gone. And I know there was more promising signs today, but you still have this feeling that Spain, you know, they play Croatia now, and I'm not massively convinced that they have that real cutting edge to like clinically take a knockout tie like that and put it to bed against what's a pretty like seasoned Croatian side that I think, as much as they're getting on a bit, they have a bit of good tournament experience too, and they're like easing their way into the competition and perhaps in some way. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what Damien thinks, but I, as much as it was 5-0 today, I wasn't looking at them going, yeah, there's your competition winners or anything like that. I don't think it was any type of a statement performance in that respect at all. I still think there's question marks about them when we get to the knockouts, to be honest.
Yeah.
Could completely agree with that, Dan. I'd almost kind of put them in a similar description to what I said about Germany. You know, they just seem to be not the force that they were, and they need to find new direction very, very quickly. And similar, once they come up against some serious opposition, potentially Croatia, I think that, oh, he's giving another penalty to the referee here. Hang on, what's after happening? It's all going off here.
Portugal looking for a penalty for handball. So we're waiting to see. It was Ronaldo. The ball was bouncing up and Ronaldo tried to hook the cross in. Yeah. And it certainly hit a hand for sure.
And the hand is way up above his head. I think that's a stonewall.
That's going to be a penalty, I think, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The hand's very, very high there.
Well, suddenly Germany are worried again. This night's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? So
Germany have come very close to giving away a penalty, by the way, in the other game. They've just committed a foul right on the edge of, well, yeah, fallen into the area. Sané, like, sort of, Hungary have had a chance a few minutes ago here. It's not all one-way traffic. So
yeah.
Germany are getting into, like, they've brought on Goretzka for Gundogan, and, you know, so basically a more attacking option. And they're, you know, they're throwing bodies at it. But it's, as I said, it's like half an hour to go now, and all of a sudden this is getting real for Germany, I think.
It was Jules Koundé, the right back for France, and he was trying to close down Ronaldo. As Damien says, he had both his hands up in the air. A touch of trying to balance himself as well, and yeah, it seemed natural enough, but when the ball hits your hand and your hand's that high, then it's going to be a penalty. So here we are on the hour mark. It's Ronaldo standing over the penalty, the puff of the cheeks, the hands on the hips, all of the Ronaldo moves, and it's Lloris in goal. This is to get Portugal off bottom spot and to put Germany out of the tournament as things stand. Shock horror, Damien. Ronaldo scores penalty again.
Yeah, same side. Same side he went to with his first one. Lloris went to his left again. Ronaldo went to the goalkeeper's right, to Ronaldo's left. So clinical penalty. You know, it's amazing how many penalties this guy scores. Dan is fast doing math there and permutations, and he'll update us where we stand at the moment.
Dan, who's playing who? Tell us now. Dan.
We're back to England-Portugal now. England-Portugal is where we are, I think. Are we? Oh, no, hang on. Trying to think. Yeah, England-Portugal. Yeah,
England-Portugal. Is that right?
Yeah. England-Portugal. And Hungary down to third, yeah. Hungary can only finish second if France win.
Dan, if you're not careful, there's going to be like a Kevin Kilbane-esque League of Nations, Nations League thingy montage made out of you here.
Well, apart from the fact that all my information, I think, so far has been accurate. So I think that's positive.
It's the one key difference.
There.
The one key difference.
That's a crucial difference.
So give us that again. Germany at the moment are out. Who's playing who?
It's England-Portugal. Next Tuesday, and who are actually France up against? That's what I need to figure out, that part of it, as the group winners.
I think it's straightforward as it used to be, is it?
Yeah, because the third place stuff, like, sort of,
We don't know. We won't know who France are up against yet, because all the third places have to be sorted out. So you don't actually we don't know. For instance, earlier on with Spain, for instance, earlier on, we know that Spain are playing. Oh, it's gone for me now. I jotted it down. But we don't know who Sweden are playing. Yeah, we know Spain are playing Croatia on Monday. And Sweden, because they're top of Group E, we don't know who Sweden are playing yet. So I think the same would apply here to France. But Spain are playing Croatia on Monday.
It's sure to be Sweden and Ukraine as it stands.
This is genuinely the worst radio we've all been part of in a long time.
Talk about something else.
Sorry, it's not my fault Portugal scored. We had to update people.
Let's get back to talking about something we do know something about, because at the minute, I don't think it's coming across amazingly well.
I'm not sure you'll podcast this particular episode.
Modric was good last night, right? Can we agree on that at least? As we talk about Modric or something, some neutral topic we can agree on.
Well. Just on that then. So Spain, you were rounding off your Spain chat there. Spain have Croatia on Monday. Who wins that one, Damien? We saw Croatia last night at Hampden.
I think Croatia will make life very, very difficult for them. Just to reiterate what Dan said, Slovakia made it very, very comfortable for Spain. They stood off them. They let them pass. They let them kind of have their way with them. And that has to be taken into account. Croatia won't do that. Croatia will have some sort of tactical plan to disrupt them, to stop them getting into a rhythm, to stop them finding a rhythm to kind of exert what they are very, very good at, and that's passing, moving, and keeping teams stretched across the pitch and switching the play. That's what Spain do. So you think Croatia will come up against something, and then that's when I talk about similar to Germany, when they come up against something different, Spain have to have that cohesion to kind of get themselves going and get a win somewhere. So as soon as Spain come up against a super organised side or a very, very good team, I think they'll get found out as well. So obviously that's in the context of Spain winning the tournament. I don't think Spain have anywhere near enough to win this tournament.
Mm. Dan, the Munich Allianz Arena situation, I think, has just blown up in a way that I wasn't sure it would, really. When this first started a couple of days ago, the request went in and it was bubbling away, but now it's like the main talking point almost in football this afternoon. And I understand there was a like a fan came on the pitch with a rainbow flag before the game as well. UEFA today, they've just tied themselves in absolute knots. They, after denying Germany the permission to have the rainbow covering around the Allianz Arena, released their own statement where the UEFA logo is covered in the rainbow flag, and they're talking about how the rainbow flag, it's a symbol, and UEFA is a symbol as well. It embodies all our core values, promoting everything that we believe in, a more just and egalitarian society, tolerant of everyone regardless of their background, belief or gender, etc. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous that after the last couple of days, then UEFA are somehow releasing this statement where they're drenched in the rainbow flag, and yet the situation in Munich was denied, the permission was denied. Viktor Orban has ducked out of going to Munich and avoided this match. They've just made the whole situation very, very confusing for themselves now.
Yeah, and I will, we're speaking of confusing, Germany have just scored. We'll process the meaning of that in a minute.
How are we meant to have a conversation about anything here?
But if we also want live updates, right? We have to get...
Tell you what, right, Damien.
I'll do it, yeah.
Whistle your favourite tune there until the next goal.
Okay, I got it.
No, but listen, UEFA have a track record for sort of balding these things up in some respects, you know. I mean, we've seen it previously with... you know, their statements around certain things, like their stance, I think it was pointed out on RTE tonight, so not to echo the same points, but, you know, their stance on racism, how soft it can be. And, you know, they as an organisation, like, they're obviously a funny outfit, because in one hand they'll talk about sort of respect and, you know, the importance of what UEFA stands for and embodies, and on the other hand, they're hamstrung a bit because they could be relying on Hungary. And certainly, you know, in terms of delivering for UEFA in this competition, and by delivering I mean as many people in the stadium as possible, Hungary have ticked a lot of the boxes for them. And like, UEFA will talk about respect on one hand, and then they will bring, you know, major events to Turkey and Azerbaijan and places that maybe have issues as regards sort of human rights and stuff like that. So and Hungary have just scored again from the restart, so I mean, we just can't even have a proper discussion with something not happening here.
Thanks, sake. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Who are Ireland playing? Do Ireland play Germany? Jeez.
What a game. But listen, UEFA just don't, they don't, like, they're always reactive. They're almost like, in some respects, like a lot of football organisations, like, you know, we've seen it with the Super League, you know, episode where UEFA were actually temporarily cast as the good guys. But again, organisations will behave in a particular way. Then there's a backlash. Then they think maybe we've got this wrong in some respects. And eventually they tend to back down, although UEFA didn't quite do that in this instance. And I just can't get away from the fact that, like, there was a possibility, and still not 100% out of the question, if there's a backlash in the UK for going a particular way on things, that they need Hungary for the semi-finals and the final. So they weren't probably going to go down the road of fully, you know, peeing off Viktor Orban. And that has to be a factor in what's going on here. And that really doesn't, portray UEFA in a particularly favourable light.
No, it doesn't at all. And I was looking into just the situation in Hungary. I mean, it's amazing. Before Ireland played Hungary, Viktor Orban was not high on anyone's agenda. And now, like, we're all over Viktor Orban and Hungary. It's amazing for those who think sport and politics don't mix. I mean, the extent to which this is all blown up now. So the new law, in effect, it's very similar to that Russian one where it goes against what they call the promotion of homosexuality amongst under-18s. It bans, like, any content in schools which is deemed to promote homosexuality and gender change. In effect, education, I would think, talks in schools to young people, a lot of them probably going through confusion about their sexuality, and so it's banning all of that. And what was also almost as pernicious and pointed and grotesque about the whole thing was that the law was tied up with strict penalties for paedophilia, which almost helped get it approval I was reading. And so the conflation of the two, like I said, is just, you know, this is like, it's, there's an unbelievably nasty undercurrent to the whole thing. So, you know, it's horrific, really. And all of us know many, many wonderful people who directly would feel so affected and upset by this whole thing. And like, it's not even ignorance. It's just hate. Well, Viktor Orban says it's traditional Christian values trying to stand up to Western liberalism. That's his story and he's sticking to it. But frankly, it's hate. And so when Germany try and take a stand against this, and by the way, 13 of the EU's 27 states wrote a long letter condemning this law for, you know, the awfulness that it is. So when Germany try and step up here, and the UEFA rule is that because the lights would be a protest against this specific law in the Hungarian parliament, that therefore it crosses a line and it's somehow political. But Manuel Neuer wearing the armband at the weekend, well, because it's just a more broad statement of inclusivity, that's okay. That's where they just tie themselves up in knots. Like, this isn't so specific as to be like, you know, we're campaigning about this very specific law, you know, pay cuts for a certain workforce in a certain country. It's not real like getting into the weeds of policy. It's simply saying you're equal regardless of sexuality and we stand against, you know, anything that goes against that. That's all, like, it's so basic. And like, by UEFA, Dan, coming out and saying, oh no, like rainbow flag and pride, like that's so core to who we are. In a way, it's, they're defeating their own point. They're saying this is fundamental. And yet when Germany want to make this so-called fundamental point, then UEFA are saying, oh wait, that's a bit too specific in this instance. So you kind of have to say to UEFA, is this a core principle of yours, or actually now that is this actually a very specific principle of yours at certain times in certain ways? Because they're not behaving as if it's a core principle, and that's where they've created this absolute mess for themselves. I'm just amazed there hasn't been a goal while I was talking there.
Yeah, no, and like, I mean, UEFA will defend that on the basis that the idea for the you know, the rainbow thing initially, like, came from, like, wasn't it the Munich, you know, a prominent official in Munich. The mayor, who was specifically responding. And it was like, you know, no doubt it was targeted because of who the opposition is. But as you say, you go down the road of, like, you know, where do you begin and end with political, you know, what constitutes a, you know, political act, you know? You know, that listen, it's very hard to sort of just not just like agree with what you're saying there. I mean, that's basically what the situation is. And like, you know, UEFA clearly are just, you know, they play politics when it suits them, because obviously, you know, there have been at times where, you know, taking games to particular countries, you know, which even during COVID would have been sort of pretty controversial, like particularly actually in Portugal, which was one of their favourite venues. But obviously, and this is a slight tangent, but you know, there was obviously local people there who were pretty affronted by, you know, how things work. But UEFA have these countries that they have these very good relations with, and it's hard to avoid the conclusion that they're sort of they're bowing to them a bit, because like, you know, this whole thing, like political gestures and football and the poppy and certain stands. I mean, didn't the FAI get done a couple of years back for wearing a 1916 thing on a shirt? Like, There's sort of an a la carte approach to it sometimes in terms of what's acceptable and what's not. And this is sort of a classic case where UEFA have... This is going to be discussed again. I suspect there'll be some form of big grand gesture from them going forward to try and... when they realise the wind is blowing against them on it. But I suppose the damage is probably done at this stage.
I wonder as well. I think there's been a Father Ted Dougal Maguire effect about all this as well. You know, we wouldn't be talking about it at length like this. It wouldn't be dominating if they had just given permission. It might have been mentioned and noted, but it wouldn't be the absolute, you know, number one story in some ways that it's become today, which is ironic. So we're going to take a short break. As things stand, France are through, Portugal play England on Tuesday, Hungary qualify and Germany are going out. We will take a short break afterwards. Damien, I want to talk to you, get your thoughts on England last night and also France this evening. Have France just scored? No, sorry, I'm watching the replay. Okay, don't worry about that. False alarm. I want to get your thoughts on France as well, what you're making of France at the moment as tournament favourites. Football on Off the Ball with Paddy Power, Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England scored at the Euros. Last night's Raheem Sterling goal brought a total of €20,000 to Irish football so far, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. We'll take a short break. We'll be interrupted at least half a dozen times, but we will talk France and England with the lads next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total €20,000 so far for Irish football.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, you're very welcome back. Joe Malloy with you this evening. We have Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. We have Damien Delaney with us. If you're just tuning in, I think I can tell you that the first 25 minutes of this program, a disgrace. Nothing short of a disgrace. All you missed was a ton of goals went in, UEFA have hollow ethics, and Damien Delaney's six-week-old is sleeping better. Frankly, that's all you missed. That's all you missed. Damien, me and you did a stellar job last Wednesday, which leads me to the conclusion that this is Daniel McDonald's fault this evening.
I thought I'd try to kick the show off on a light note with the, you know, the child sleeping better, and I didn't know it was going to descend into the farce that it was.
It has been a farce. It has been a farce. So here's where we are, fellas. Let's embrace the farcical nature of, I know the third team qualifying thing has some downsides, but it does make all this a bit volatile. And I think the last couple of nights have been pretty good. So France in first, Portugal in second. They will play England. At the moment, Portugal play England. Hungary qualify. Germany are going home. So it's Germany 1-1 with Hungary. It's Portugal 2-2 with France. And Germany, as things stand, are going home. We'll come on to England in a sec, Damien, who may well be playing Portugal if things stay the same, and they almost certainly won't. But what about France then? Because they've been accused, when they won their opening game, of only ever doing enough. And we talked at length about Pogba and about France generally. They draw their second game against Hungary. They're drawing this one this evening. The tournament favourites and all that, they're not, I know you tipped Italy, but tournament favourites generally, they're not playing much pizzazz, you would have to say, even though they knew they were qualified this evening. What have you made of them?
Yeah, I agree. They're not kind of firing on all cylinders just yet, but I think they're still in a good spot. They still look like they can kick it up a gear. They're not a million. They're not like England, where England, I think, are so far away from coming to the boil that you wonder, will they ever get there? But with this France team, I do get the sense that they are in control of what they're doing. You know, the draw against Hungary wasn't fantastic, but make no mistake that, you know, they're going into this group, even though they're the current world champions, in the back of their mind thinking that we could very well not get out of this group. You look what's happening to Germany right now. So, listen, they're playing Germany, Portugal, and they have gotten results. And even a 2-2 tonight does them. And I think they'll be very, very happy playing England on Tuesday night.
Okay, well, then that's fair enough then. We don't need to dwell on France if you still think they're ticking along. Okay, so England then, why so down on them? What are you seeing there that's the biggest cause for concern?
Lack of confidence, a lack of belief. Kind of the first game, you're okay, they're feeling their way into it. Then the Scotland game, you're kind of going, okay, local derby, we're giving the benefit of the doubt. And I even made the point last week, or just after the Scotland game, with the lads in the morning, that, you know, maybe he has a plan, Southgate. But then you watch what happened last night, and you know, three times in a row where England have not even been anywhere near the boil. Mm. I mean, no, I'm starting to think, okay. And I believe it's a lack of confidence. And I'll kind of talk about their last 2 years of Southgate leading into this tournament, how confident he was in his team selections, his formations, his tactics. He was so tactically flexible. You know, sometimes they didn't always come off, but they always got results, England. You know, they found a way to dig it out. And you kind of think to themselves, God, the tactics weren't great. But you feel like he's priming them for the tournament football, where they might need to go to 3-4-3. They might need to go to 3-5-2-1-1. You know, a variety of formations and ways. And they were still getting results. And then they show up to the tournament, and it's like, okay, seatbelt firmly on now, because it's almost like he's frozen, the manager, and he hasn't shown up with the confidence and the swagger that he had pre-tournament. And he's just gone, okay, let's go with two defensive midfield players, or let's go with a couple of number 10s, I'm not sure. And then last night, it's almost completely, let's go for pace, there's not enough pace in the team. And it feels like he's managing on the fly, as opposed to coming in with an absolute game plan of how he sees England. And he knew who his three group games were. He would have had them well scouted. He would have figured out, surely, okay, against Scotland, we need to do this. This is how they play against, you know, the other teams. We have to play a certain way. But he's just gone 4-2-3-1. And Harry Kane dropping deep. I got it last night. Harry Kane dropping deep with Saka and Sterling, providing the threat in behind. And to a point, that worked really, really well. But the midfield two of Calvin Phillips and Rice just can't seem to get going. They just can't seem to get any fluidity to their game. There was a stat there I read a while ago about passes forward per second or something. They have the lowest of the whole tournament, which means they're basically played very, very conservative. I think a lot of it stems from the two centre midfield players. There was a time when England would have played, you know, 3-4-3, and Declan Rice would have been the only defensive midfield player, and England kind of showed up with that swagger. But they just haven't got it, and it looks like they've gone into their shell and they've kind of gone into protection mode already. And if they come up against, well, basically Portugal, I think they could get beat comfortably.
Rice can play a better game than he's playing. We've seen him in the Premier League. He can run beyond defences and get involved in attacks. Like, he can do a bit more than he's been doing. But it's against Croatia, he literally didn't pass the ball forward. I mean, literally. Yeah. He did it a bit more last night. And we saw Phillips create the goal against Croatia. So clearly, if you give him a bit of a licence to get involved, he might do it. But they, well, as you rightly say, they're two more defensive-leaning players, but they're playing ultra-defensive as well. Absolutely. It's like they've been told, you know, like, really, lads, no chances here. And even in possession, not taking chances. Absolutely. Is there any argument, if you were looking for a bit of optimism for England's cause, that, OK, no points for style in the group, and they're certainly not going to have any style points the way they're setting up, but when they come up against the big boys now, at least their setup is rock solid and they might nick a goal, and that's kind of where they are, and it's fair enough.
Yeah, but you were talking about in a lot of people's eyes, one of the favourites for a tournament. They were talking about them just limping out of the group and then showing up and being defensive, trying to nick a goal against,
No, it's very like Giovanni Trapattoni rocking up in 2012 kind of ambition.
It's not like England was supposed to show up, puff their chest up, stick their chin up and puff their chest out and just go, right, we're here. Yes. We're playing at home and we're going to stamp our authority all over this tournament. A little bit like what Italy have done. You know, they've just blitzed their group. They showed up like a train that's moving at full speed and you're not going to stop it. And they've gone through their group that way in a whirlwind. And England just seemed to be very tentative, very like, oh my God. And that's pressure when it comes on. And I think that stems from the manager. It absolutely does, because I think he's shown up and he probably had all these plans and all these meetings and all these scenarios with his coaching staff. If this happens, if that happens, because bearing in mind, you know, they don't do a whole pile for a lot of the year. They just go through scenarios of what if this happens, what if this happens, and they try and recreate things. And if those situations arise, they're semi-prepared for it. But it just seems like they've come up and just froze and gone, let's not take any chances and get out of the group, and then we'll take our chances against maybe Portugal and hopefully we can get through that. I think the only way for them to snap out of that would be if they do play Portugal or France or Germany. I'm not sure. I'm not going to state who it is. But whoever they play...
There's been a goal, lad.
Shut up, Dan. Shut up. There hasn't.
It actually happened 2 or 3 minutes ago, but I didn't want to interrupt because this has been a car crash. But continue.
Yeah, whoever they do play, I think they just almost have to throw the shackles off, and if they beat one of those three big teams, it's got the Germany.
I'm going to finish your point because I know you're going. If they beat one of the big teams, they might kind of get a bit of confidence.
Exactly.
To go for it. Yeah. Okay. So I'm jumping in here. So sorry, I knew where you were going. I'm being rude here, but we're up against the clock. But I do take your point. Maybe they're like, oh, geez, wasn't so bad. Let's go for it now. France first. Germany second, Germany play England. As things stand, Germany have gone from being out of the tournament for a long part of this evening to now second, playing against England because they've just scored. Portugal will qualify. Hungary will go home. So France first, Germany second, play England. Portugal third, qualify. Interesting. So now Germany, I mean, you're not so hot in Germany. They might play England. England, Dan, like, Damien makes a brilliant case there, the way he lays it all out. I mean, a touch of stage fright almost about this thing.
Yeah, listen, I probably agree. I suppose, the counterpoint is that in some way, you know, he's trying to be arch pragmatist from the start to almost prepare them for knockout football, that when we get to that round of 16, and you see sometimes how these tournaments can be open and entertaining, and then you hit a different level, that clearly they want to be prepared for that. But I think the concern would be that even if you say that that's the case and that's the way that they want to play, you know, they want to be reasonably conservative in terms of, say, the use of the two, the central midfielders in terms of how they operate. It's still, to me, it's sort of that there's no real clarity over what he really wants and what his best options are further up the park. And that's the thing. Like, after a number of years in the job, like, he still doesn't really know. And you kind of wonder, is it a case, there's almost so many options that there's actually, they've lost a certain clarity of thought. Now, possibly, in his defence, again, you know, for example, his use of Sterling seems to be pretty clear in his mind that he wants to use Sterling, probably for that sort of change of pace. You know, you've seen them at times go a small bit more direct in terms of having that ball, and they've clearly felt okay, you know, he's one for us. But it's just in terms of, I don't know, I just think there was even spells in that Croatia game, to be honest, where I thought Croatia took a bit of control. And I think against the better side, these passages will be punished. But you do flip it around. The knockout games can be a different animal sometimes. And if you want to take a glass half full view, maybe, you know, they're going to be prepared defensively for that.
Yeah.
If it goes very cagey.
And Harry Maguire did well. Harry Maguire did well last night, and a great pass for Kane. So, like, Damien, if you're looking for a solution here, because Southgate, I think Dan's spot on. They have so many options. There's now no clarity. It's actually, you know, too many options can kill a man and all that. Say he's got his back four and whoever his fullbacks are, it actually doesn't matter the way they're playing because they're staying deep. It's not like even when Reece James was playing, he bombed on. So he's got his back four. He's not going to suddenly throw in Jude Bellingham alongside Declan Rice. So it's going to be Phillips and Rice. So at least there's a bit of clarity there, even if people think that's too defensive a two. Kane plays, Sterling plays. We don't know the Mount situation. It's Foden or Grealish. Bukayo Saka did well. You know, he can chisel something out of that. Okay. Is it that you think with Phillips and Rice, like that almost scuppers them in terms of like dominating a game? Are they kind of screwed at source there almost?
I take Dan's point about having a lot of options and sometimes it can be debilitating. But, I mean, you have a variety of all types of players, and that's what I was hoping for, that, you know, against Scotland, you know, pacing behind. Okay, against a team that sits deep, you need a lot of number 10s to shorten pockets, teams with a high line, and you pick the right players, the right system for the right game. But he's just shown up and just kind of almost froze, and it didn't. You know, they won the first game, and then Scotland didn't go well. And last night, it was almost like the weight of the world came down on him, and he just went, let's just go back to bog standard, two defensive midfield players and pacing behind, you know. And I just think he's got caught in a little bit of stage fright, I suppose, for the want of a better word. You can never have too many options. You can never say that, you know, he has too many options, he doesn't know his best 11. I mean, you can't just say, this is my 11. England have been guilty of that in the past. This is my 11, and this is it. And when we come up against somebody that stifles that, we haven't got a plan B. That's what the whole 2 years was, having plan A, B, C and D for any situation that gets thrown against us.
It's silly me to say to you then, did like Grealish or Bukayo Saka play themselves into the team? Because you're making the point it depends who they're playing against, which at the moment is Germany.
Well, right, but I just still think that playing with two number sixes, I'm not a fan of it, as we've spoke at length over the time. And if you do have two number sixes, you have to have one that passes forward, because if you're going to play with the three number 10s, so to speak, so if you're playing against a team that sits deep, you want to play Mount, Grealish and Foden, then you got to feed them. You know, you got to get the ball into them in the pockets because they're showing up in these pockets. But if the two lads are going back to the centre-backs, it's a difficult ball for a centre-back to go through two lines of passing to get it to them. And then all of a sudden these guys get frustrated. And when they start then going deeper than the midfield and almost, you know, Foden getting it off the defensive players, then you know that you're goosed, really. So somebody with just a bit more progressive passing in there alongside Declan Rice. You see the way that, you know, Kante and Pogba work really, really well together. You know, Pogba kind of starts off a lot of the attacks, but as soon as it breaks down, Kante just says, out of my way, please. No, I'm asserting my dominance because, you know, I'm moving central and being the main man. So they just need a little bit more progressive passing, but confidence is a big part of that.
So Dan, Germany play England, France top the table, Portugal qualify, Hungary out. Germany against England on Tuesday, I mean, it's so do or die for Southgate. Like, suddenly if they lose this and bomb out the way they've played, the World Cup 2018 starts to age very badly. People are like, well, you lost to Croatia, you lost to Belgium, you beat, you know, I can't even remember who you beat in those games, and now you bombed out of the Euros. Suddenly Southgate goes from, literally I would say 10 days ago, almost being like one of the more celebrated managers, Gary Neville saying he's the best asset we have, to like, the jury is not out anymore, the jury's in, and it's not good, Garrett. Like, there's so much riding on this for him.
Yeah, and listen, it's England-Germany at Wembley, 25 years on from him missing the penalty in the Euros against Germany. Like, there's going to be a lot of noise. I mean, England-Germany brings a degree of noise with it. It's actually interesting. Germany taking the ball to the corner flag here at 2-2. So they're clearly not too unhappy. Like, they could win the group, but they're clearly not unhappy with the situation. The message has got through.
Right, right.
You know, they're not trying to avoid England, put it like that, you know. Even though the winner would place, you know, a third place team, but in the harder half of the draw. But no, you are right. Like, I mean, the things can, listen, with the English football team, the dial can move very quickly. And like, they were the underdogs in 2018 that surprised everybody. Whereas now, you know, there's an expectation because of the generation of players they have. So no, there's a lot riding on it for him. And it's it's England, Germany. I mean, this is box office. This game would have been in Dublin, of course, if the tournament hadn't been taken away from us. But anyway. And Belgium, Portugal, as it stands, by the way, that is another tie to look forward to. So
okay.
The competition is really hotting up.
Fellas, yeah. We're out of time. I mean, I don't know how any of us are to feel about the last 52 minutes, but suffice to say, we did our best.
if there's another goal in the next minute, the whole... it's all redundant. Burn the podcast.
There's someone listening to this tomorrow right now saying, Germany, England, what the hell am I listening to? Fellas, we got to go, but thanks so much. Daniel McDonald of the Irish Independent, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Damon Delaney, I don't blame you. I blame Dan. Thanks so much.
I'm sorry.
No, great stuff, fellas. Thanks a million.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetZetGo.ie.